So first I'll read out the paper which I have prepared, and then towards the close add a little bit more if necessary, and we can have an exchange of ideas. The terms used in Indian philosophical systems are peculiar. The word Advaita is used here in the sense of monism. Although the term monism was first used by the German philosopher Christian Wolff, monism is a philosophical position with a long history. Monism appeals to a single unifying principle to explain all the diversity of observed experience. Two main types of monism are generally recognized: idealistic monism and materialistic monism. Advaita Vedanta. Both the basic trends of philosophy, namely materialism and idealism, have been there in Indian philosophy right from the very ancient times. No single philosophy can represent the multitude of Indian philosophical tradition, because such is the opposition among the different systems of Indian philosophy. Vedanta is only one of the several systems of Indian philosophy. The Vedanta system has three main schools within it. These are the Advaita, Vishishtadvaita, and Dvaita. All the three mainly rely on the Upanishads, Brahma Sutra, and Bhagavad Gita, which jointly constitute the Prasthana Traya. It was Gaudapada of the 6th century AD who first systematized the Advaita school of Vedanta. In his Mandukya Karikas, he set forth the basic tenets of Advaita Vedanta. Sri Shankara of the 8th, 9th centuries AD elaborated the philosophy through his commentaries on the Prasthanatraya and a number of works of his own. Later Acharyas continued the tradition of developing Advaita Vedanta, and it grew into a full-fledged philosophy. Ontological aspect. What is primary reality? Advaita Vedantic answer to the question is a peculiar one. Brahman is the sole supreme reality according to Advaita Vedanta. Brahman is absolute. Therefore, the question as to the primary or secondary nature of Brahman's reality does not arise. In fact, Advaita Vedanta views reality in its three grades. These grades are the Paramarthika or absolute, Vyavaharika or practical, and Pradipasika or phenomenal. Brahman is pure existence, consciousness, and bliss. Brahman alone has absolute reality, and the world has practical reality. Mirage and the like are phenomenal realities. Both the practical and phenomenal realities are related in Brahman through avidya or maya. A common misunderstanding is that Advaita Vedanta denies the reality of the world. In fact, Advaita Vedanta assigns to the world absolute worldly reality. Laukika paramarthikatva, that is the word used in Vedanta Paribhasha. It is a basic textbook of Advaita Vedanta. What Advaita Vedanta says time and again is that the world is illusory. Illusoriness and unreality are not to be confused. Are we then to draw the conclusion that Advaita Vedanta accepts more than one reality? No. Advaita Vedantic grades of reality are not divergent spatially or temporally. Spatially and temporally, there is only one reality in Advaita Vedanta, and that is Brahman alone. All other realities are merely superimposed on Brahman. This does not mean that Brahman is limited by space and time. There is no space or time outside or independent of Brahman. The very word Brahman or Atman is interpreted in such a way as to mean all-pervasive and eternal. The word Brahman originates from the root brh. Brh means to include. And also, it has got the meaning Brahmakam, that which is that which is inside of anything and everything. And the same is explained in the Bhagavad Gita, Sutre Manigana Iva. It's just like the thread going inside the pearls. That which is so is Brahman.
Like a connecting essence.
Yeah, yeah. The other word used in Sanskrit is Andaryami. Sarvandaryami. Sarva means everything, all. Andaryam, andah means inside. Yami, yati, iti. The root ya means to go. That which goes inside of anything and everything. Sarvandaryami. There is no spatial or temporal reality other than Brahman. The world is real for all practical purposes. Advaita Vedanta has no objection to assign any kind of reality to anything other than Brahman, as long as it does not affect the spatial and temporal reality of the soul, supreme single Brahman. Outside of Brahman, or subsequent to Brahman, or side by side with Brahman, above Brahman. Does Advaita Vedanta admit of existence of the world? The answer is that it does not admit of the spatial or temporal existence of the world on a par with that of Brahman. In fact, Advaita Vedanta has no plain and simple answer to any of the philosophical questions. When we say that Brahman alone has spatial and temporal reality, there arises the question, is there quality in Brahman? Advaita Vedanta holds that Brahman is devoid of all qualities whatsoever. How can then there be spatiality and temporality in Brahman? The answer is still complicated. The spatial and temporal reality of Brahman is accepted in the sense that there is no space or time without Brahman. Really speaking, there is nothing other than Brahman. Advaita Vedanta, which admits the practical reality of the world, is not prepared to assign the world a reality equal in status to that of Brahman. It is in fact based on this problem that the controversy between Dvaitins and Advaitins begins. The Dvaitins say, let there be the same reality to the world as that of Brahman. Advaitins discard the view. In this tussle, Advaitins go to the extent of saying that the world is false. Falsity and practical reality of the world go hand in hand according to Advaita Vedanta. In this respect, Advaita Vedantic terminology is completely different from that of all other systems. Materiality is no criterion for reality according to Advaita Vedanta. It never considers materiality as reality. On the contrary, it puts forward materiality as the proof of falsity. In fact, in the tussle between Advaitins and Dvaitins, many pages of the books belonging to both the systems have been used for discussing this problem. Especially, Vyasa Tirtha, who wrote first a voluminous book named Nyayamrtam, countering all the basic standpoints of Advaita Vedanta, was word by word retorted by Madhusudana Saraswati in his Advaita Siddhi. Then there followed a series of commentaries and sub-commentaries. So, against Madhusudana Saraswati's 10 points put forward by him in his Advaita Siddhi, and also defending Nyayamritam, there appeared out a commentary on Nyayamrita named Nyayamrita Tarangini. Then, you see, retorting to Nyayamrita Tarangini's viewpoints and defending Madhusudana Saraswati's Advaita Siddhi, there arose Chandrika. And the details I'll be dealing with in my next paper, Dvaita-Advaita Controversy. And I have contributed a book to this library on this particular issue. Because that book is named Dvaita-Advaita Polemics. And this this is an MPhil thesis guided thesis of my friend and colleague, and recently he published it, and a copy is here in the library.
His name
is Shishupala Panikkar of my department. We studied together, we are classmates, and at the same time he took PhD under my guidance. At the moment, we are working together too. So, it puts forward materiality as the proof of falsity. It is in this fact, it is this fact that makes Advaita Vedanta pure idealism. Then the epistemological aspect. Whether reality is cognizable or not, against the materialistic position that all realities are cognizable, Advaita Vedanta holds that cognition pertains to the false. Like materiality, cognizability also is considered as a proof of the inference on the falsity of the world. Absolute reality, Brahman, is not cognizable. In the absolutely monist Brahman, no cognizable relation can be admitted. At the same time, Advaita Vedanta speaks of realization of Brahman as the summum bonum of human life. If Brahman is not cognizable, how can it be realized? Advaita Vedanta brings in the Kanthagraivayan Nyaya in this connection. Since Brahman is the only temporal reality, we all are Brahman already, but we do not know this fact. It is because of avidya or ajnana or ignorance. On the eradication of ignorance, Brahman is realized as one who is ignorant of the necklace one wears on one's neck, realizes it at last. This is called Kanthagraivayan Nyaya in Sanskrit. Kantha means neck. Graivayam means necklace. One wears his necklace on his own neck, but not knowing that, taking it to be lost, he searches it for it everywhere, and at last somebody points out, "Hey, you are having your necklace on your neck. I see. Oh, it's here." It's in the same manner that Brahman is realized. It's not something new. It's no new knowledge. Actually speaking, we all know that we are all Brahman. But at the very same time, we do not know that we are Brahman. How can both the knowledges go together? Because our knowledge of Brahman is interrupted by ignorance or avidya or maya. As soon as you wipe out maya, the original nature appears. It's not something coming afresh, but it was there, but it was veiled. It's called veil, yeah, veiled by Maya or Avidya or Ajnana. And when you unveil it, of course, it's as if you newly got it. Yeah. Advaita Vedanta admits of a manameya pratikarma vyavastha, which is applicable to the world superimposed on Brahman. You see, in Advaita Vedanta, the basic realities have been reduced into two. You see, actually speaking, there is no world. It's all mithya or illusory. But at the very same time, it has been assigned a practical reality. As was stated earlier, there are three kinds of realities, namely the ultimate, the practical, and the phenomenal. So the world is practical, and the world has practical reality, and so its origin, its existence, its dissolution, etc., are described in Vedantic books. Otherwise, there is no use for these kinds of explanations, since there is ultimately only Brahman. But since this world has practical reality, people will have queries, of course, whereas to do away with these queries, of course, these things have been elaborated in the Vedantic textbooks. Here, the term is taken from Madhusudana Sarasvati's own another book named Siddhanta Bindu. It's a commentary on Sri Shankara's 10 verses on Brahman, which is called Dashasloki. Dashasloki means a collection of 10 slokas. It's said that Shankara went to his guru, Govindapada, to be initiated into the Acharya order. And Govinda put to him this question, Kastvam, who are you? So in answer to his question, Shankara, of some 9 or 10 years, replied, Na bhubhim na toyam, na tejo na vayuh, na kam va na tesham samuha, ani kandikatvat, tadeko vasitthasita, tadeko vasishta shiva kevaloham. Na bhumir na toyam na teju na vayu. I am not this earth. I am not this water. I am not this fire. I am not this air. I am not this ether. Why? Anekantikato, they are all, you see, anekantika is a special term that is used in Nyaya Shastra. What do you mean by anekantika is concomitance. If something is permanent or pertinent, of course, it has to be seen there at all times. If it is not so, it cannot be considered to be its quality or its part. This is meant by this anekantikattu. So, of course, these elements, by the five elements, what is meant is the entire world. because all the entire world is later development of the basic five elements. So I am not by I is not men this body. Then who are you? Shiva kevaloham. I am Shiva. Shiva denotes the actually Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. All these words denote the soul supreme Brahman ultimately. So understanding the caliber of Shankara, Govinda admitted him to his order, and so it is said that he was initiated into the Acharya Parambara by Govinda. So Govinda is considered to be Shankara's guru. As a commentary on the 10 such verses composed by Shankara, Madhusudana Saraswati wrote Siddhanta Bindu. And in it, he has put forward this argument that the entire worldly practice can be reduced into two schemes, namely the scheme of Manameya and the scheme of Jiva Ishvara. All the subjective elements have been taken together, and these are represented by the concepts of Ishvara and Jiva. And all the material, objective, the other one was subjective, and the all other objective elements, objective part of the entire world, has been reduced into Mana and Maya. Mana is the word Mana means of knowledge, and Maya means the object known. So all the worldly practices have been reduced into two, namely Mana Maya Vyavastha and Jiveshwara Vyavastha. And all these proceed from our ignorance of Brahman. And on eradication of ignorance, Brahman is realized. And on realization of Brahman, there is actually speaking no word further to speak. And so that position is explained in the Upanishads. Yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasasaha. You see, from where all words return, since they cannot reach there through human minds. What's this Brahman? Brahman is that from which all words return without reaching, unable to reach it. Since our knowledge we obtain through words are mental modifications, and we cannot mentally consume Brahman because it is outside the purview of our small mind. So the Upanishads say that the words without reaching Brahman will return. That is the entity named Brahman. So, on realization of this kind of a Brahman, what happens actually is, that also is stated in the Upanishad, Manaso Hyamani Bhave. The mind becomes non-mind. But in the beginning I said that the terms used in Advaita Vedanta are very much peculiar. So, manaso hyamani bhavi. When your mind becomes non-mind, then what meaning it makes? When we approach these things from the very outside, of course, sometimes we'll feel, but it is not so. So as to get into the Advaita Vedanta itself, of course, and that is why perhaps for the beginners, certain qualifications have been prescribed. Without attaining such qualifications, if you enter into the pursuit of Vedanta, of course,
it will be of no use to him, not only to him, not it will be of no use to Vedanta also.
So, certain qualifications have been prescribed, especially by the acharyas, so as to be initiated into Vedanta, the qualifications should be attained. So, in answer to all questions, ultimately, Advaita Vedanta has only one refrain. It is Brahman. Then we come to materialistic Advaita. The Sankhya is admitted on all hands as one of the oldest systems of Indian thought. Beginnings of dialectical thinking can be seen in the Sankhya philosophy. The Madhyamaka or Madhyamika school instituted by the Buddhist philosopher Nagarjuna, belonging to the 1st-2nd centuries, put forward the idea of materialistic monism. Hegel's philosophical works are still the best representation of dynamic monism as a philosophy. His encyclopedic knowledge enabled him to discuss the application of his system in nearly all spheres of philosophical thought, from history of philosophy to human history, logic, and metaphysics. This is why a great number of the critics of dynamic monism still prefer to address Hegel directly on most philosophical subjects, even 1.5 centuries after his death. Hegel's philosophy is idealistic dialectics. The Sankhya of Kapila seems to have influenced Hegel. Hegel has mentioned about the Sankhya system of philosophy in his lectures on world philosophy, and these have been collected and published, in which his comments, his ideas on Sankhya also have been included. In the philosophy of Hegel, the totality of objects is preserved by the absolute idea, or absolute spirit, or universal spirit. The kernel of his logic, the negation of negation, is used throughout his appraisal of nature and society. And this negation of negation is a process which we come across in the Upanishads, which is called in the Upanishadic style as neti neti. Philosophy of nature reveals the absolute as the unity of opposites in nature, which, following quantitative changes, undergoes qualitative change, and thereby moves in a spiral of thesis, antithesis, synthesis. It's a famous Hegelian triad. And in one of my papers, I have compared this triad method of thesis, antithesis, and synthesis, and a counterpart in our Indian system of philosophy, known as the Athikarana method. Because in the commentaries, in the Parsha, which are called Parshyas, in the Parshyas, especially in the Parshyas of Sri Shankara, we come across this particular system of presenting things in the form of Adhikarana. This Adhikarana is constituted of five limbs, Vishayaha, the subject to be discussed, Vishayaha, the doubts concerning that subject. If no doubts are there, of course, no discussion is necessary. Then Purva Paksha, the opponent's viewpoints. Then Uttara Paksha, the thesis. And all these have to be presented, dealt with in a logical manner. These are the five constituents of the Adhikarana method. I have compared both the triad and adhikarana methods, and actually it was a paper presented at the World Sanskrit Conference in 1990 at Vienna, and that has been included in my book. The book is named Advaita Vedanta, Dialectics and Indian Philosophy, a copy of which I have contributed to this library. It's there in the shelf. Yeah. Then we come to Marxist monism. Karl Marx's version of Hegelian dialectics is materialistic. As expressed in the first volume of his Capital, he put Hegel's system, which was standing on its head, back on its feet. This materialist position was taken from Ludwig Feuerbach, who had turned from the young Hegelians to sensationalism of German philosophy. Dialectical materialism, the philosophy of Marxism, retained all the basic tenets of the Hegelian system. Only the absolute idea was changed to the material world. So, the materialism is not there in the Hegelian system, and the idealism is not there in the Marxian system. That much is the difference. Everything else is taken from Hegel. So Marx was very much indebted to Hegel. Materialism provided monistic unity of unity for intellectuals who could no longer believe in spiritual unity. The world of contradictions was once again united in a Heraclitean fashion, but not by any concrete matter like fire of Heraclitus, but a matter as absolute and abstract as the Parmenidean plenum, which guaranteed this unity and monism in face of new discoveries of components of that. So, even today, there are several arguments going against Marxism, because you see, Marxism holds the view that matter is ultimate. No, actually, it is not so. The material world is ultimate. Matter was split. Even atom can be in atom theory also has become outmoded. You see, further splitting up of the minutest particles is possible at the moment. But this does not make any change in the Marxist approach to the ultimate reality. What is real ultimately? There are two answers in the whole history of philosophy, hitherto originated or not. One is, you see, you need not search for its ultimate cause. Outside of this universe. This universe is ultimate. You need not search for its cause or its root somewhere else. Actually speaking, there is no somewhere apart from this universe. Everywhere includes in this universe. But on the other hand, there is another viewpoint. No. This universe is limited, and this universe has come into existence at the mercy or at the will of something beyond. That kind of a power has to be admitted, without which we cannot explain the origin or existence or dissolution, anything of this universe. These are the two basic approaches we find in the entire systems of philosophy hitherto known or originated. And in this, Advaita Vedantic position is that all this has come into existence right from Brahman, and the materialistic standpoint is that no, whatever we see, whatever we perceive, whatever we accustom here is part of this universe, and this universe is ultimately real, and there is no point in searching for something beyond this universe, because you see, the very word beyond is meaningless. Because we now know a lot, science has progressed a lot, but at the very same time, it has to be admitted that at the micro level and also at the macro level, see, even though we have attained huge knowledge, of course, this is very limited. Yet, the most part of the micro world is to be known. The most part of the macro world also is to be known. But this need not be a cause for our worry. It depends on the theory of knowledge you adopt. If somebody wants to frighten us, saying that, you see, the huge amount of the entire universe is yet to be known, let it be so. Why should I worry? So this is the approach taken by a materialist. But ultimately, you see, the universe is real, and ultimately it is single. Why? Because at the minutest level, even today, science has progressed to that extent that when we go splitting up, ultimately we come to a state where we cannot further split it up. Meaning, everything is interrelated, everything is connected, so you cannot separate something from something else ultimately, at the ultimate level. So there also it is monism. It's the same way in Advaita Vedanta. You go on, you see, discarding this thing, that thing, neti neti. Ultimately you come to the Advaitic reality, which is qualified in the system of Vedanta as Brahman. So, my point is that at the level analyzing this ultimate reality in terms of its number, whether it is one or more than one, the answer to the question put forward by both materialistic monism and idealistic monism is the same. In this sense, Advaita is used in the sense of monism. Advaita is not that which pertains to Vedanta alone, but to what is called scientific materialism also. In other words, there are Vedantas other than Advaita, namely Dvaita Vedanta and Vishishta Dvaita Vedanta. There are also, you see, Advaita. There is also Advaita other than Vedantic. There are Vedantas other than Advaita, and also there is Advaita other than Vedantic. That's my argument. Now you can
interfere and counter argue.
Before we continue, I just wanted to check, you know, when we're talking about the Marxist materialistic ultimate, what were they saying? Was it the last stage of the different developments, and then we have a shared communistic
It all concerns the society. But ultimately, we have to take into account the basic triumph of Marxism. Marxism means Marxist philosophy, Marxist economy, and also Marxist politics. This is relevant in Marxist politics and not in Marxist philosophy. You see, people make a mess of things. You know, that's something different.
Yes, yes, yes. That is the ultimate social order.
Which we can bring about.
Yes, yes.
And that can be brought up. That we cannot, we are not in a position to simply bring about by meditating upon it.
Yes, yes.
No, it has to be brought about only through human action. And single human action cannot do anything. Because man is a social animal. And so, at social level, only this can be solved. So, social revolutions are necessary, and revolutions can be brought about. So, after getting the power, what is to be done? That is the most important thing. And brought about revolution and attained power, what they did. You see, the past experience of the... So such... But at the same time, we have other examples too to be pointed out. What's happening in China? What's happening in Cuba? So we cannot simply discard that in principle.
It's not a simple paradigm.
So, as I told you in the beginning, so as one who approaches these problems without attachment, I am not attached to Advaita Vedanta.
Yeah.
I am not also attached to Marxism, because Marxism does not need any attachment. Actually speaking, in philosophy, what is needed is your philosophical standpoint, without us adopting or without having some sort of a philosophical standpoint of your own, you cannot enter into philosophy. Because you'll not reach anywhere.
You already identified.
So my standpoint at the moment is very clear. You see, I am not concerned. I'm not concerned with the unknown part of the world, because this was not the present state was not the previous state. See, very little knowledge was there. Then, at the moment, the accumulation of human knowledge is gigantic. Some thousand years ago, did man expect this kind of revolution? So, in the same manner, of course, after some thousand years from here, of course, the state of affairs will be something entirely different. So, I have no concerns. See, I am mainly concerned with this present. You see, this was the approach of two Advaitins about whom I made mention in the beginning there, in my state, in Kerala, southernmost part of India. You see, there were two Advaitins, Chattambi Swamigal and Sri Narayana Guru, who have contributed a lot to Advaita Vedanta. And Chattambi Swamigal has written a book in Malayalam, Advaita Chinta Paddhati. And that has been translated into Sanskrit by two of my students, a copy of which also has been contributed to this library. Yeah, Advaita Chinta Paddhati. And the other one, Sri Narayana Guru, he has composed works in Sanskrit itself. One is Darshanamala, which also is a basically Advaita Vedantic textbook. Another book which he has composed is Advaita Deepika. And another small sutra, like the Brahma Sutra of Badrayana, Sri Narayana Guru also has composed, which is called Vedanta Sutra. Only 14 sutras are there. But very beautifully, very surprisingly, he has incorporated all the principles of Advaita Vedanta in all the 14 sutras. And one of my students is doing his PhD on this Vedanta Sutras at the moment.
Yeah. And his name is Sri Narayana.
Sri Narayana Guru. Yeah.
And you spoke of the Hegelian dialectic by which one attains to ultimately the absolute ideal, idealistic,
universal spirit,
or the ultimate material, materialistic. I wanted to ask you about the process, both ontological and epistemological, by which Maya, the world, let's say, attains to Brahman. Ontologically and epistemologically, is it a process of kind of evolution and of enlightenment, and also the process by which the practical and phenomenal realities come about from the origin, from the ultimate reality?
It's come up for the original. And so what we have to do is simply do away with this karma flash and nothing else. And that was why the example of Kanthagraiveya was brought in. You see, there are no such steps to attain Brahman. But at the same time, there are different paths or ways to realize Brahman. And in his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, Shankara has dealt with these things, because Sankhya is one way, yoga is another way, and yoga itself is of many ways. Anasakti yoga, bhakti yoga, karma yoga. So several paths, ways are there. But then there may arise another question. You see, then is it at the mercy of Brahman that we obtain its realization? No, it's also not so. So in this connection, Shankara's standpoint is that it's not so. Ultimately knowledge is that which brings about realization of Brahman. You see, all other paths or ways will lead to the knowledge, the path of knowledge. And ultimately, or that which immediately causes realization, is knowledge. Jnana deva tu kaivalyam. What he explains is that jnana, or knowledge, is the only means to attain kaivalyam, kaivalyam, the word means singularity, meaning, attaining this supreme Brahman state. So all other paths will lead to, it's what stated in the commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, is that if you do things without aspiring for their results, if you work in this universe, in this world, and act, without aspiring for its results and their enjoyment here, but dedicating all those to Ishvara, in due course, your mind will become purified. And on becoming your mind purified, of course, you will have this quality to attain jnana nishta. And on attaining this quality, of course, you will get jnanam, or knowledge. And on getting knowledge, of course, Brahman will be realized.
Well, and what about the converse direction, the creation or coming about of the world?
Yeah, there also, you see, it's something very peculiar, and in Advaita Vedanta itself different views are there. These views have been explained, as I told you, in the Siddhanta Bindu, where Drishti Srishti Vada, several such views have been dealt with. Because you see, we cannot normally say that the world originates, because if the world originates, it's a reality. Then it cannot be done away with. Then it's not that ultimate reality cannot be considered to be Advaita. Yeah. So it's not so. You see, the world actually is something superimposed on Brahman. And something superimposed means, as we have experienced in our day-to-day life, you superimpose a serpent on a piece of rope. See, as long as you have the impression that it is a piece of it is a serpent, of course it will create all those things which actually, if there were a serpent,
pseudo-reality.
Yeah, pseudo-reality. And this world also is so. It's real only for the time being, but the time span is much better than that of this phenomenal reality for which the example was put, namely the serpent superimposed on piece of rock. That is very very short span. The reality of the phenomenal, or the phenomenal reality is of a very short span, whereas the practical reality is of a better span of time. But both are
same status.
Yeah, of the same status. And ultimate reality is assigned only to Brahman. Yeah.
Sorry, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Because it leads on.
Yeah.
The implication is that practical and phenomenal reality come about by ignorance.
Exactly correct.
So is there a teleology posited? Is there a reason given for why Brahman should cause this illusion to come about? Is there anything like that? Like in Christianity we would speak of a divine plan. And if not, how do we explain the coming about of this illusion?
But you see, there is that kind of a teleology, but that is not in any way connected with Brahman. Because, you see, Brahman cannot be held responsible for anything. It's nirguna. It's niranjana and nirave. So it cannot be held responsible. But at the very same time, the human responsibility is upheld. So, herein, the problem of birth and rebirth comes. Yeah. You see, the series of births and rebirths, and in Advaita Vedanta also, these have been accepted, and these have been explained so that the result of all actions you perform, have to be enjoyed. Whatever you do will create a potential, and based on that potential, you will have to reap its result.
Great responsibility.
Yeah. So the series of birth and deaths is a destiny of humankind. And that's why Shankara, in one of his well-known stotras, says, one of his well-known stotras is Bhajagovindam. In which he says, Punarapi Jananam Punarapi Maranam Punarapi Janani Jathare Shayanam Punarapi Maranam Punarapi Jananam Punarapi Janani Jathare Shayanam. Again and again there are deaths. Again and again there are births. Again and again, Janani Jathare, in the womb of mother, Shayanam, you lie down. Iha samsare bahu dustare kripaya pare pahi murare. So this world is the samsara world. Bahu dustara is very difficult to cross over. So kripaya pare pahi murare. Oh God, Lord, save me. Gracefulness. So the series of births and deaths, and so you have now born this way in your form based on your past deeds, the deeds which you committed in your previous births. And these deeds, the results of which have to be enjoyed, or the deeds, the results of which you have to enjoy in your account. So deeds in your account, it's like a bank account. You have a deed account. And in your deeds account, you have a fixed deposit of past deeds. And you have to enjoy. And then only it will extinguish. Without enjoying the results, no deed of your past will extinguish.
So if I am poor, if I just...
No, let me conclude. You see, this fixed deposit is called Sanchita Karma. Sanchita Karma. Sanchitam means collected. Sanchita Karma. Deeds of the past births collected. And you have now got this birth as a result of one or more the results of one or more deeds of your past births. That is what is called prarabdha. Prarabdha means that which has begun. So the present birth is based on the result of one or more deeds which you have done in your past births. Those particular deeds which are causative of your present birth, this is called prarabdham. Prarabdha karma. And here, once you are born, of course you cannot proceed without doing karma. So you are still doing karma. And the results of these also have to be reaped. And these are called agami karma.
Present.
No, yet to come. The results of which are yet to be enjoyed. So these three kinds of deeds are there. Karma are there. Karma means karma phala. Results of karma. And you see, on realization of Brahman, what is stated in the Bhagavad Gita is that Jnanagni sarva karmani pasmasat kurude tatha. Jnanagni, the fire of knowledge, will bring about an end to all the deeds except the prarabdha. The Bhagavad Gita, what is stated, Jnanagni sarva karmani pasmasat kurude tatha. But Shankara explains it this way. Of course, here, sarva karmani, all deeds, this has to be taken in the sense that except prarabdha. Because prarabdha will come to a close only
on its, no, only on its full enjoyment. The prahya. Yeah. Even if you attain, suppose your present birth has to last for 97 years. As a result of the past deeds you have accumulated, of the present birth is to enjoy the results of two deeds which you have done in your past births, and it has to last for 97 years. Suppose you obtain release or obtain realization at the age of 70, then can you get rid of the remaining part of no, you cannot. So in that case, that particular person who attains realization at the age of 70 and who has yet to live here for some 27 years more, he is called Jivan Mukta. He is living here at the very same time. He is a man, one who has attained mukti or moksha. Mm-hmm. And it is from him that one has to seek initiation into the path of knowledge of Brahman. It's stated in the Chandogya Upanishad, Acharyavan Purusho Veda. You cannot simply realize Brahman on your own. You have to be initiated into the path by some Acharya. So, Acharyavan Purusho Veda. Then, how can there... Then there arises the question, on realization of Brahman, there is another Upanishadic sentence, Brahmavit Brahmaiva Bhavati. One who knows Brahman is Brahman itself. And if Brahman is realized, there is no distinction at all. In the same Dasa Slogi of Shankara, he says, Na Shastra, Na Shastram, Na Shishyo, Na Shiksha, Na Chattvam, Na Chaham, Na Vayam Prapancha. Na Shastra, Na Shastram. See, the teacher is that who imparts the Shastra. Shastra, the teacher. Na Shastra, Na Shastram. The science or the Shastra, the text. Na Shishyo, Na Shiksha, and there is no disciple. There is no impartation. Na Chattvam, you are not there. Na Chaham, I am also not there. Nava ayam prapanja, and this world also is not there. Anikandi, the reason put forward is everything is rendered into English in concomitance. It's a term used in the Nyaya Shastra, because in first to know any branch of Indian philosophy, a basic knowledge of Indian logic is necessary. So these people, they have been in, they take lessons in Nyaya.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Tarka Sangraha is taught to them. So this is anekanti, because you see, if we qualify something with some qualification, if it is not part of the thing, we take it to be something anekantikam, inconcomitant. In that manner, here also, you see, all these, the impartation, the text, the listener, the speaker, and this word, everything else is illusory. What ultimately remains is Brahman.
So inconcomitant. Yes. So it is not part of it at all.
Not at all. So, as you were asking, so there is no point in trying to find out some steps in the realization.
it comes all of a sudden. And also there is another, you see the realization can be attained in several ways. And as I told you, several paths are there. And one path is bhakti. Bhakti. Bhakti or devotion. And there is one very interesting stanza in Malayalam. It's in Sanskrit, yeah. My Malayalam, my mother tongue Malayalam has got 60 to 70% Sanskrit words. Sometimes even Malayalam is thought to be Sanskrit, and Sanskrit is thought to be Malayalam. So you see, have you heard about Guruvayur? In the central part of Kerala, there is one very well-known Krishna temple. He is called Guruvayurappan. Guruvayurappan. And there, you see, there lived one Nambudiri Brahmin. And these Nambudiri Brahmins belong to the uppermost strata of society. And with regard to their marital life also, there were several allowances. They could marry any lady they like. And the usual marriage ceremony was also not necessary. For example, you see, my name is Maheshwar Nair. In my community, a Brahmin can marry a Nair lady by simply giving her a piece of cloth. It was the system prevalent in those days. So this kind of one Nambudiri, so he can be considered to be in Sanskrit a Sri Lambata, womanizer. He was a Sri Lambata. But at the age of 90, he found out that, there is no meaning in this worldly life. Of course, I have to attain moksha, release. So, he thought about it. And he was in the vicinity of Lord Guruvayurappa, Lord Krishna. So I never used to think about such salvation. Now I am going to Lord Guruvayurappa and pray pardon for my ill acts. So he went there. So he composed one stanza. Katvanko katika dvayena. See, there is one character in the Mahabharata, Puranas, etc. Katvanka. He obtained realization in katika dvaya. Katika dvayam means, you see, 64 katikas are 24 hours. Katika dvaya means two katikas. In two, it will come to 1.5 hours or so. He attained release in 1.5 hours. Similarly, a list is given. Abala, Yamartha, Pingala. Pingala is another name. Pingala was like Mary Magdalene. So, they are originated a beautiful poem in Malayalam. One of our poets composed a poem on Mary Magdalene. It is called Magdalena Mariam. We call it in Malayalam. One well-known poet composed a poem on it. Then another poet composed a poem on Pingala. So both poems are available in there. So she attained release. She was a prostitute, but she attained release. Her mind changed and she attained release. Yamarthataha is in about 1 hour. Yamartha means in about 1 hour. See, he this way presents a list, and so in the end he says, Navati prayobi nantannavyate. See, I am 90, but I have no guilty conscience. If the Lord blesses me, of course I can obtain release this moment by praying this way. He just bowed to the Lord and he died, and it is said he attained release. So it's a very, but it has to be considered here that this the very concept of or this paradigm of Brahman, this is something which is peculiar and which you cannot come across in any of the systems of the world, because the concept behind this very word Brahman is something peculiar. And that is why at times even very great scientists like Einstein, they just are tempted by these systems. Einstein has written these things in his collection called Ideas and Opinions, his viewpoints on Bhagavad Gita comes, because he found some sort of solace in reading Bhagavad Gita. The stress on Brahman, that is something peculiar to Indian philosophy. But what my standpoint is that, of course, I am not concerned with ultimate reality. Of course, people seeking ultimate reality, that is not also none of my that also is not none of not my concern. But you see, what happened in the past in our country was based on all these, the caste system as well as the Chaturvarnya system prevailed, and the low caste, the lower strata of the society, they were all exploited. And in my state, in Kerala, these two people, Chattambi Swamigal and Sri Narayana Guru, they upheld this Advaita Vedanta philosophy itself and pointed out, you see, this Advaita is ultimate reality, what logic is there in discriminating people based on caste? So he has written a small poem in which he put forward, in the beginning he put forward this argument in a Sanskrit stanza. Manushyanam manushyatvam jatirgotvam gavam yatha. You see, in the case of cow, we say cowness is its generality, jati. In the same manner, what is the generality of mankind? Manhood, manushyatvam. Na brahmanadirasivam hatatvam vetti kopina. But Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, etc. is not this kind of Brahmanatvam, Kshatriyatvam. This is, it's not this kind of a generality. But nobody realizes it. So that has no meaning. So he appealed for this kind of human relationship among people based on humanhood. And it clicked. Actually, in our state, of course, it has now become improved a lot. In my state, these caste distinctions, etc., have come down. Yeah, very little now at the moment. It's now secular, almost secular. All these Christians, Muslims, etc., are there. But the state of affairs is comparatively better than that prevails in the other parts of, especially in your Gujarat. Okay. Thank you for sitting so well. You can proceed if you have queries.